Sasquatch is a podcast about Bigfoot. It's recorded for the skeptics, the believers, the so-called knowers, and those who just have a casual interest in the subject. Information, visit sasquatch.com. This is Sasquatch, a podcast about Bigfoot, and I am one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove. I'm joined tonight by my pal
Mark Matsky.
And tonight we are talking about hoaxes and hoaxers, and we will not be directly referring to any of these people as hoaxers, except Dyer. I think we can, right? Rick Dyer. Like, doesn't everyone just accept that at this point?
Well, I think when you admit that you lied,
hoaxed,
that yes, then it's okay.
What gives? It's just a big hoax, a big joke.
Did you ever intend to put this across as the real deal?
No, sir. It's Bigfoot. Bigfoot don't exist.
That's all this was a big joke. It got into something way bigger than what it was supposed to be.
Matt Whitten and Rick Dyer say when they concocted their Bigfoot hoax, they had no idea Bigfoot would get legs like it did.
It started off as just some YouTube videos and a website.
It got legs and ran. It's got crazy now.
We're all about having fun.
I did not find it funny.
Chief Jeff Turner says he's not laughing and has fired Whitten from the Clayton County Police Department.
He lied on national TV. So that defense attorney now can say, so how do we know you're not lying now?
I don't believe it does affect my credibility at all, because this is Bigfoot. It would be one thing if I came out and said that I had something else that is tangible or real. But right now, as far as I'm concerned, there is no real Bigfoot.
Whitten says his arm is still in a splint from the bullet wound he took in the wrist July 3rd in the line of duty.
Placed his life on the line for others.
Whitten and Dyer say Bigfoot was...
Yeah, you're done. But there's, as long as there has been a Bigfoot, it seems like there's been Bigfoot hoaxers. So the entire Bigfoot phenomenon kicked off out... Well, let's make that clear. Bigfoot phenomenon, Bigfoot, the term Bigfoot, that phenomenon started out on the West Coast, and there were tracks found, and there was a man in that same area where those original Bigfoot tracks were found named Ray Wallace. Okay. Now, I'm not saying that Ray Wallace was a hoaxer, but he told everyone that he hoaxed tracks.
Yeah.
On his deathbed. So, I mean, at that point, you know, you're done. Like Dyer, you've admitted to being a hoaxer. So,
and not only that, but you have members of your family showing the media what the tracks looked like.
And claiming credit for pretty much every track ever found.
Yeah. And that's where it gets pretty sketchy.
Yeah. Because Ray Wallace supposedly faked a lot, and I believe he faked a ton of tracks out on the West Coast in, what is it? Is it Northern California or,
yes.
or Washington? Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's Bluff that Creek, Northern California. Actually.
I mean, right.
Exact same area.
But I will say, anyone who's listening to the show who has an interest in this, go read, there's at least one chapter in Jeff Meldrum's book, Dr. Meldrum's book about Bigfoot, that I found fascinating, where he talked about the Ray Wallace tracks and how just because he faked tracks in that area, they didn't line up with every track that was found out there. So there is evidence that there were actual Bigfoot roaming around there, such as Patty, the Patterson-Gimlin film, and the costume that was actually four midgets wandering across.
Or 4-year-olds.
4-year-olds, yeah. Either way. Yeah. So Ray Wallace was kind of the godfather of hoaxers. Is that what we're saying?
I think that's fair. Okay. At the very least. All right. And the thing that's interesting about that, too, is, and this started to mess with my mind when I got into it a little bit, evidently Ray Wallace had multiple fake track sets made and gave them away to people to use in their own spare time, evidently.
For fun.
For fun. And the what I mean that it messed with my mind is that it made me question then, because, you know, there's the story has always been, well, we've found a symmetry in tracks over a wide geographical area, which suggests that Bigfoot was migrating or something of that nature. But if you've got people with the same track sets going out different places, leaving the same tracks, essentially, that could potentially explain why you have, you know, an overlap in, or a person could say, this is the same creature, because it is the same mold, or it is the same cast from which the track was made. So that idea sort of has been buzzing around in my mind ever since I read about it, and I'm not sure what to do with it.
The way they faked those tracks was interesting, too, where they would basically, someone would get in a truck, and they would hold, have you ever seen that? They would hold on to the truck, and the truck would kind of pull them as they'd step, and it would add this weight to the footprint, so when it actually imprinted into the soil, it would go deeper, and it would also give them a much larger stride, which is, it sounds insane and insanely dangerous.
Yes.
Like, can you imagine clinging? You're wearing these giant wooden stompers, and you're wandering around out in the middle of the mountains with a pickup truck or something pulling you. How did someone just not crack their skull on the back of the truck at some point?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great explanation for a straight line of tracks down a dirt road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then, you know, there were tracks that were found going up steep grades of hills. And that seems to stretch credulity a little bit to think that they took the loader or whatever, I forget what it's called, but that they would take it up and down hills and things like that. But it does, you know, Ray Wallace may have had some motive for concocting these stories beyond just, you know, tall tales or duping people. You know, it's been intimated that he perhaps had a financial reason to do that, to say that he couldn't complete the job that they were contracted to do, and one way of getting people to leave the job site was scare them away. I mean, I don't know, but it's sort of like going down the rabbit hole when you start talking about this hoaxing topic, because there's all kinds of possibilities that swirl around these individuals, and they, you know, they brought it on themselves to a large degree, because they came right out in the end and said, we did do this. We did hoax. And we did try to fool people. It creates its own sort of situation.
The difficult thing is when you have guys like Paul Freeman, who... The line on Paul Freeman is very, very bizarre to me, because a lot of people say he's a hoaxer. But then other people say, no, all he said is that he had made Bigfoot prints himself at one point to test. Is that correct? Like, he wanted to test how you can hoax a track. I mean, the Freeman footage is fascinating. Bigfoot footage, possible Bigfoot footage. It looks, whatever's in that video looks huge. And it like knocks it into a tree, and you almost see the tree fall. I mean, it's just very interesting footage. Yeah. But he also at some point came out and said that he had made tracks. So what do you do with someone who on one hand, they have this very interesting, possibly legitimate bit of evidence, and then on the other hand is saying that they have faked evidence? You know, like, it's almost the, boy, I don't want to go there. Never mind. The Bod Randing. Todd Standing.
Todd Standing.
Sylvanning. Like, I'm just, there's so many confusing things mm-hmm. when it comes to this. Like, how do you decide what is thrown out and what is you know, accepted yeah. when it comes to some of these guys? Because once you, in my opinion, once you've lied about something and you're willing to admit that you've lied about something, I don't know how I can take anything you say seriously. It's like the boy who cried wolf. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. That's the thing, is that once you've falsified something and you even own the fact that you've faked something, then short of producing the body, I don't know what you could possibly do to repair your reputation. Mm-hmm. The thing that kind of reminds me of is another, you know, colorful name in the early Bigfoot, you know, in the Jerry Crew and the Ray Wallace era, and that's Ivan Marks.
And a man noted for clearly knowing what a film shows, this film clearly shows the fabled Sasquatch, the huge, primitive, ape-like man sometimes called Bigfoot. For all these years, people have been tracking the creature without success, save one or two highly questionable pieces of badly shot film. Ah, but now we see Ivan Marks and his remarkable movies. For some strange reason, Ivan Marks seems to show up carrying a camera every time Sasquatch steps out of the woods. Marks filmed the creature not just once, but countless times over the last 30 years, and in varying locales, beginning in Nevada in 1958, walking across an open field. Here is Sasquatch peeking out from behind a bush, peeking out from behind another bush, walking behind a bush, peeking out from behind a snowy bush. This is a shot of Mrs. Squatch peeking out from behind a bush. Here, Sasquatch takes something out of a stream. Here, Sasquatch throws something into a stream. Here, Sasquatch attacks Mr. Marks and his camera. And here, Mr. Marks shoots Sasquatch with a camera and with a gun at the same time. These two people, creature and scientist, are simply drawn to each other in some inexplicable dance of nature. Notice the eerie similarity between Sasquatch and Dan Aykroyd in a hairy conehead suit. Frankly, we were amazed by this stuff and by the fact that Mr. Montiel has never submitted the films for scientific evaluation. Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking about Paul Freeman, it kind of reminded me of, you know, the numerous films that Ivan Marks came up with, which are nothing. They compare in no way to the Freeman footage whatsoever.
By Mr. Montiel. We will be anxious to hear the results.
You know, Ivan Marks was regarded warmly by a lot of the researchers, and John Green in particular. The thing that I was really struck by as I went back and kind of thumbed through Sasquatch, The Apes Among Us by John Green, and he has a whole chapter entitled Ivan. And the whole chapter is basically a character study of Ivan Marks, which is pretty interesting reading. I forgot how good a writer Green really is, but he's great, especially on stuff like this. And he gets to the end of that chapter, and he essentially says that Ivan Marks was a great hunter. He was kind of a great expedition leader type personality, but he was also, he could blow more smoke than anyone else. To the degree that Green gets to the end of that chapter and says that he thinks the whole Bossberg Cripplefoot incident was, in his words, was entertainment. I mean, he writes it all off, and it's mostly because of Marks, and that he had learned to pretty much immediately discount anything Ivan Marks said, while at the same mm-hmm. time he loved the guy. He said, this is a great guy. You would love to hang out with Ivan Marks. He's a lot of fun. Good guy at parties. But when it comes to Bigfoot, if Ivan says one thing, you'd believe the exact opposite. So there's that kind of contradiction and paradox that goes on with this whole thing. Particular subject.
I just started learning about Ivan Marks yesterday. I mean, I've always been aware of him, but I never knew that he was even involved with like Peter Byrne and John Green and Rene de Hinden and these guys. I had no clue, because whenever I hear his name, I just automatically think Tom Biscardi. And well, I should just go through anytime I say
you
a
named
name
one
of what? Someone of someone who's still alive, I'll just bleep it. But anyway, I had no idea he was connected with John Green and those guys, but he actually led Peter Byrne brought him on as the leader of one of these expeditions at one point, because Marks had claimed to get this film footage, and they came to find out, I mean, it was a fascinating story, but they came to find out that Marks had you know, hoaxed the footage. It was filmed in a completely different location from what he'd said. They managed to line all that up, and he got like $20,000 out of them or something for this bit of film. And it's just, this is the era, this early era of Bigfootery that I love.
Yeah.
Because this is the interplay between all these, you know, groups of researchers and men. It's just interesting stuff.
It seems like all the personalities are like outsized personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. just Ivan Marx and René Dehinden. To imagine the two of them interacting, I mean, it just boggles the mind. And in the book, I mean, Dehinden rented a trailer on Marx's property for a time. I mean, you're right. That's how deeply involved with the search they were with one another. And there's a little anecdote in Green's chapter where he talks about during Bossberg, you know, there's so much interest in that and so many people rushing to the scene, and somebody ran across Ivan Marx sitting in a diner sipping his coffee very calmly. It's, you know, why aren't you out there? And, you know, I forget, he had some flippant comment, but it just, you know, it seemed on the face of it to be, you know, if you really were interested in that, wouldn't you be out in the thick of things and really trying
right.
to. And it cast a big question mark on everything that Marx did.
What do you call a guy like Frank Hansen, who was behind the Minnesota Iceman? Because the Minnesota Iceman was basically a carny exhibit, right? And they claimed it was a real Bigfoot. And there's up until today, there's people who still say that there was a real Bigfoot and that they switched it out for the fake Bigfoot. Regardless, is Hansen, would you call him a showman? Is he just a, you know, like a Barnum and Bailey? What is he?
Yeah. You know what? I think, candidly, I think you nailed it with showman. I mean, that's a perfect description, I think, of a lot of what happened there. Now, this is crazy, but I remember growing up, Saginaw, Michigan, had a mall, the Fashion Square Mall in Saginaw, Michigan. That's near where I grew up, and I believe that the Iceman exhibit was there. I remember this as an impression from my childhood, but I also remember not going to actually see it, which is sort of a regret that I have. But it was presented in a variety of situations. I know that Lauren Coleman in Bigfoot, his Bigfoot read, he doesn't like the term carnival exhibit because it was never presented at a carnival per se. Mm-hmm. That's sort of splitting hairs, I think. But I think what he's trying to get at is the idea that it wasn't like, you know, come see the tattooed woman necessarily. But yeah, I mean, you get into the backstory of Hansen and some of the explanations that he gave. You know, the body's actually owned by a millionaire and things like that. And it veers strongly into the arena of entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah. And a certain Mr. Dyer tried to kind of change his, I cannot function when it's 100 degrees in this room. he kind of became this Barnum type showman in the last, you know, year with his little rodeo hick, you know, Bigfoot in a freezer thing. Not the Bigfoot in a freezer, but the Bigfoot in the coffin. Gimli in a coffin. Now, Ivan Marx, one of his proteges, was a man named Tom Biscardi. And Biscardi's still around today, and he's still valiantly looking for Bigfoot. Just so there's no, you know, I'm not running this guy into the ground. I'm not saying anything bad about him. I'm just going to read what the Wikipedia entry has to say about Tom Biscardi. It says, Tom Biscardi is a cryptozoology enthusiast, Las Vegas promoter, internet radio host, and film producer. He describes himself as the real Bigfoot hunter. Biscardi has been centrally involved in several hoaxes regarding Bigfoot that have garnered widespread international media attention. Biscardi was at the center of the 2008 Georgia hoax that Rick Dyer perpetrated. Dyer is the one who is typically credited with that hoax, but Biscardi was the one who kind of brought it to the media's attention and really put it out there.
What is this thing? Where'd you find it?
Okay. Just got back from Georgia, where two guys actually stumbled upon this out in the woods. One's an ex-officer who's on administrative leave for, actually he's a hero. He took one for the team. He got shot pursuing a perpetrator. And another one is an ex-correctionals officer. And they were on a show, a radio show, Megan, 2 weeks ago. And
because that hoax is probably one of the most famous, if not the most famous, Bigfoot hoaxes. I mean, I remember when it happened.
The only person that will allow to come out here is the real Bigfoot hunter, Tom Biscardi.
So you go out to Georgia, and you see this thing in the woods. Now it's in this freezer, but you see this thing in the woods. Give us an idea.
I mean, it's notorious for a number of reasons, and one of which is that whenever those things happen, the media has a field day with it. And really plays up the, I can't even think of the word to use, the ridiculous angle of the whole thing. And then proceeds to, you know, the public perception then becomes, well, this is what it means to search for the Sasquatch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's charlatans, it's showbiz, it's P.T. Barnum. And that's all it is. And I think that's, you know, fortunately, there's always another side to the story. But by and large, I think the majority of people have their opinion shaped about the subject by events like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Dyer, I mean, everyone talks about Dyer when they talk about Bigfoot hoaxes. He perpetrated the Bigfoot hoax in Georgia, which was basically these two yokels claimed that they had shot a Bigfoot somewhere in the woods, and they had put it in a freezer, and they were going to show it to the world. And it turned out to be a store-bought or an internet store-bought Bigfoot costume, Halloween costume, stuffed with various animal parts.
Mm-hmm.
Which is absolutely disgusting.
Yeah. How did they decide who gets to do that part of the hoax?
Yeah.
Flip for it? I'll do the guts.
So, I want to wrap up this episode with something that Bob Strain, one of our listeners, and had posted on our wall a couple months back when there was the subject of a Bigfoot hoax. Brought up. Hopefully he's okay with me reading this on the air, but if not, I'll just cut this out and I'll say something really profound in place of it. So what he had to say is, if someone, anyone, knowingly attempts to present something as genuine while they know it is not genuine, that's a hoax. If they benefit financially from it, it's fraud, perhaps a victimless crime, but perhaps not. The victim, in a case like this, would be the wood apes. If we interact with them at any level, drag them out of the shadows in any way, we are then responsible for their welfare. I suppose it's possible someone might do this as a misguided attempt to help these creatures gain recognition as a species, one that needs protection, which indeed seems to be the focus here, and convince themselves that the end justifies the means. However, in fact, they accomplish the exact opposite with such shenanigans. They make it even more difficult to achieve their original goal, and the animals suffer because of it. He goes on. He's mostly talking about one particular situation here, but I thought what he said there at the beginning about fraud and hoax and distinguishing between the two is very interesting, very truthful. And as someone who believes that Bigfoot is real, I liked his take on this. So I think that's a good way to wrap this episode up. And we could do a whole, you know, 4 hour long episode about hoaxers. It would just be a blast.
No doubt. Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, it's a study in human nature layered on top of the search itself. And I think that's that's one of the things that really interests me are these personalities that that gel to Bigfoot. You know, you have the sincere researchers and less sincere people who are, you know, it's hard to suss out their motivation for what they are, what they're up to.
Join the conversation at facebook.com/sasswhat. Find us on Twitter by using the hashtag sasswhat, or you can find me on Twitter at @SethBreedsLove. Mark Matsky is on Twitter at @ReverendMatsky. Send your letters to sasswhatmail@gmail.com and leave us a rating and review on iTunes.